suppose things got so bad in America. Good afternoon. This is Jean LaFrance.
I'm Becky Morrison.
From the Literature and Young Adult Department of your Tacoma Public Library. Today we have a few books on the lighter side that we've been wanting to talk to you about for some time.
The lighter side, you know, is the section devoted to humorous books in the library.
The first book we'd like to tell you about is by James Thurber. It's called Fables for Our Time.
Mr. Thurber has really become something of an American institution since he first started drawing cartoons and writing for the New Yorker magazine 25 years ago.
In Fables for Our Time, Mr. Thurber has turned moralist, but what a moralist. Here's a sample fable called The Little Girl and the Wolf. The illustration on the facing page looks very much as if it might have come out of Little Red Riding Hood, but here is Mr. Thurber's version. One afternoon, a big wolf waited in a dark forest for a little girl to come along, carrying a basket of food to her grandmother. Finally, a little girl did come along, and she was carrying a basket of food. "Are you carrying that basket to your grandmother?" asked the wolf. The little girl said, "Yes, she was." So the wolf asked her where her grandmother lived, and the little girl told him, and he disappeared into the wood. When the little girl opened the door of her grandmother's house, she saw that there was somebody in bed with a nightcap and nightgown on. She had approached no nearer than 25 feet from the bed when she saw that it was not her grandmother, but the wolf. For even in a nightcap, a wolf does not look any more like your grandmother than the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer looks like Calvin Coolidge. So the little girl took an automatic out of her basket and shot the wolf dead. Moral: it is not so easy to fool little girls nowadays as it used to be.
And that's just a sample. It's a hilarious collection, and so is a sequel to it called Further Fables for Our Time.
I wish I could describe the Thurber cartoons that accompany these fables. You'll have to take my word for it. They're very funny, too. Lovers of Thurber's dogs, which someone has described as a combination of St. Bernards and Great Danes, will be pleased to know that there are several drawings of these big, clumsy, lop-eared, and altogether lovable canines included in the books. Another favorite from the New Yorker magazine is Phyllis McGinley, whose verse is not only witty, but flawless in technique. In the love letters of Phyllis McGinley, she writes of a number of things. For example, she describes her experiences as a night watcher of television in the section called The Jaundiced Viewer. In a couplet called Almost Any Evening, she says sadly, "On all the channels, nothing but panels."
I like the one in the section called Gallery of Elders, which she calls The Old Philanthropist. His millions make museums bright. Harvard anticipates his will, while his young typist weeps at night over a druggist bill.
That is rather grim. Any discussion of books on the lighter side just has to include that household poet, Ogden Nash. From Mr. Nash's book, The Private Dining Room and Other New Verses, comes this quatrain with the title, "Maybe You Can't Take It With You, But Look What Happens When You Leave It Behind." Here's the verse. "And as American towns and cities I wander through, one landmark is constant everywhere I roam. The house that the banker built in 1902, dim neon tells me, is now a funeral home." With winter coming on, the American public again faces that common crisis, the common cold. Mr. Nash has written a wonderful ode to the common cold, which expresses what all of us have probably felt at some time or other. This appears in Mr. Nash's book, I'm a Stranger Here Myself. Becky, would you read The Common Cold for us?
I'd love to. "Go hang yourself, you old M.D. You shall no longer sneer at me. Pick up your hat and stethoscope. Go wash your mouth with laundry soap. I contemplate a joy exquisite in never paying you for your visit. I did not call you to be told my malady is a common cold. By pounding brow and swollen lip, by fever's hot and scaly grip, by these two red redundant eyes that weep like woeful April skies, by racking snuffle, snort, and sniff, by handkerchief after handkerchief, this cold you wave away as naught as the darndest coal man ever caught. Give ear, you scientific fossil, here is the genuine coal colossal. The cold of which researchers dream, the perfect cold, the cold supreme. This honored system humbly owes the super cold to end all colds. The cold crusading for democracy, the furor of the streptococracy. Bacilli swarm within my portals, such as ne'er were conceived by mortals, but bred by scientists wise and hoary in some Olympian laboratory. Bacteria as large as mice, with feet of fire and heads of ice, who never interrupt for slumber their stamping elephantine Roomba. A common cold, gadzooks, forsooth, ah yes, and Lincoln was jostled by Booth. Don Juan was a budding gallant, and Shakespeare's plays show signs of talent. The Arctic winter is rather coolish, and your diagnosis is fairly foolish. Oh, what derision history holds for the man who belittled the cold of colds.
A new collection of poems by Howard Moss entitled A Swimmer in the Air has just taken its place on our shelves. Moss, too, worked for the New Yorker magazine on the editorial staff. He's no newcomer to the poetry field, since this is his third volume of poetry.
Hasn't his work also appeared in periodicals?
Yes, both here and abroad, but to get back to this new collection, one of my favorite sections of the book is the modified sonnets, which he dedicates to adapters, condensers, and abridgers everywhere.
Do you mean parodies like this one of a famous Shakespeare sonnet, Shall I Compare Thee to a Summer's Day?
Yes, why don't you read that one for us?
Who says you're like one of the dog days? You're nicer and better. Even in May, the weather can be gray, and a summer sublet doesn't last forever. Sometimes the sun's too hot, sometimes it is not. Who can stay young forever? People break their necks or just drop dead, but you, never. If there's just one condensed reader left who can figure out the abridged alphabet after you're dead and gone, in this poem you'll live on.
It has certainly been fun talking about books on the lighter side today. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Join us Thursday for more book notes from your Tacoma Public Library. Until then, this is Jean LaFrance.
And Becky Morrison.
Wishing you pleasant reading.